So I kind of hoped she might say, come and talk about death, because I find it an easier topic in some ways. I mean, partly because I've had a lot more experience of working with people who were dying. And actually, I've given at least two talks here in the Manchester Centre about death in the past. So one of them was way back, I think, in the opening series of talks in this centre. So I could have pulled that out of the hat quite easily, but not Surya Ka fancied peace, so. And don't we all? So I thought, I'll give it a go. But I thought, actually, I haven't had a lot of time to think about it. And when I did try and start to think about it, I thought, oh my God, why did I say I could talk about peace? Because it really is a big question. So I know this series is The Big Questions, isn't it? Which is such a great title and such a great series. And I think partly I wanted to say yes because I thought it was such a good idea to have a series looking at these kind of issues and really encouraging people to kind of look at how their Buddhist practice, if they have one, might interface with those big questions. And for those of you that maybe don't have a Buddhist practice but think about the big questions, maybe offer some insights into what Buddhism might have to offer to the world today. So, but it really is a big question. In fact, it's so many questions. I ended up the other night just with this headache, really thinking, how do I pull all this together? There's just far too much to talk about. So I feel a wee bit daunted. I'll say unusually I feel a little bit daunted. I don't usually feel daunted giving talks, but I do a bit today. So I thought, I don't have any answers. Just like to say that to you before I start. So even though it's a big question, I don't have any big answers, sorry. So you can still get your money back. Well, you probably haven't paid anything yet, but you can still leave if you wanted a big answer. What I thought I'd do really is just explore the questions a bit and just talk really a bit from my own experience. That's mainly what I'm going to do. So I've always wanted to change the world. For as far back as I can remember, very young, I remember being very aware of what seemed like injustices in the world. I grew up in a very political household. My father was communist. He was a member of the Communist Party, and he had a lot of people around a lot of the time, and there was always a lot of talking about things in our home. Religion and communism. A bit James Joyce, actually, my family. And my dad had these friends. I was listening to Radio 4 the other day, and there was somebody talking about Esperanto. Remember Esperanto? Some of you are too young to have probably ever heard of Esperanto, but my dad actually ran the Scottish Esperanto newspaper, and was really committed to this idea that there was one language that as many nations and races could use to communicate with each other. So I kind of grew up quite politically aware, really. And I wanted to change the world. So I also got into politics, but I decided communism wasn't far enough left. So I had a look at some of the other alternatives. Now, some of you who are of the same generation as me might remember some of those alternatives. And so I used to sell newspapers at street corners. And I used to harangue people. And I was also a member of CNDs. My father was a member of CNDs, so I remember going on CND marches. I can remember shouting at people, you know, about them being nasty capitalists, this, that and the next thing. And looking back, I can see that actually if you want to create an ambience of peace in the world, to stand at street corners and scream at people probably doesn't actually do it. So I realised at some point that I was part of the problem rather than part of the solution. Although I couldn't have articulated it like that at that time, obviously. But looking back, I can see that now. And most of my experience in politics was anger. It was anger-fueled, in a way. And I also realised, looking back, that most of my experience, not just in the political sphere, but really, generally, was very oppositional. Now, it's partly temperament. I'm partly a bit oppositional by temperament. But also, politics can be quite oppositional. So certainly my experience was very much us and them. It was very much good guys and bad guys. It was very much kind of like looking for solidarity, but solidarity was looking outwards rather than looking inwards. So rather than kind of seeing what one had in common, it was very much related to difference. and very much looking for an identity that was kind of based on difference, really, rather than similarity. And as I say, I harangued people a lot. I was quite well known for haranguing people, both people that I knew well and people that I'd never seen in my life before. I was a street corner haranguer. And one of the things as well, looking back, and at the time I did realise this actually, was that I had a lot of violence in myself. I grew up in quite a violent environment. Both my immediate environment was quite violent, but also the environment around me was pretty violent. I grew up in a part of Glasgow that was famous for gang warfare, and my cousins were quite high up in some of the local gangs, so I have quite strong memories, like one memory of about 6 years old, getting my cousin running up to me in the street and sticking a knife in my school bag so that if he got caught, he wouldn't be carrying a weapon. So I grew up in an ambience. I don't know if any of you have ever seen any of Jimmy McGovern's stage plays, but I kind of grew up in one of them. So when I first came across Buddhism, it was quite a shock to my system, really. But I'd come to the point of realising that you couldn't actually change the world without changing yourself. So I had realised that, as I say, I couldn't have articulated it as such, but I did realise that I was part of the problem. And I had such a lot of anger in me, really, such a lot of anger, which was partly to do with external objective things that I saw happening around me in a broader sort of world. I remember, I don't know what age I was, but I read somewhere that 7% of the population in Britain owned 84% of the goods. And the reason I knew this was because there was a theatre company called the 784 Company, and that was why they'd chosen that name. And I was so angry, I wrote to the Prime Minister, and I can't remember who the Prime Minister was, but they never answered me. I was so cross. And I decided I was going to become Prime Minister, and I was always going to answer letters from children. But I didn't become Prime Minister. I took a slightly different kind of route. But anyway, I was at this point in my life where I could see that you had to change yourself, really, before you could change the world. I always say this, so some of you might have heard this before. I couldn't even change my library books in time. I was a mess. You know, I was part of the sex and drugs and rock and roll generation. So actually, I was too stoned to change the world anyway, even if I had had a decent plan for doing it. And I was in this very strange space. This is 1977, and some of you were very young. And I just, for various reasons, knew I had to change something in my life. And I was sitting, actually, in a pregnancy advisory service office, waiting to hear whether I was pregnant, which would have been extremely disruptive to my life and upsetting. I wasn't. But while I was sitting there, I was thinking, I've got to change my life. I must change my life. I wasn't pregnant. I walked out like, yes! And I walked out the door and there was a big poster that said, change your life. I thought, okay, I could give that a go. So this was a poster advertising a series of taped lectures by Sangharakshita, the founder of our order and movement. And the talks were called Buddhism for Today and Tomorrow. I thought, oh, well. Might be interesting. So I phoned up the number and they said, yeah, just come and have your dinner with us and listen to the talk. A bit weird. But anyway, I went off and I did that. And it was amazing, actually, because this talk was a talk called A Blueprint for a New Society, available on Free Buddhist Audio. And it'd been given in 1976, the year before. And this guy, with a very strange somnambulant voice, is that the right word? That's not what I mean. Somniferous, no, what's the word? Yeah, put you to sleep. I kind of put you to sleep sort of a voice. Was given this talk and he said, you can't change the world without changing yourself. But, he said, you don't want to change yourself just for its own sake. You change yourself to change the world. I thought, okay, where do I sign up? This sounds good. And the reason I mentioned this voice is because it was quite a bit surrealistic. Cause it was this kind of, I think actually the recording was a bit slow as well. It was in one of those recorders, you remember those recorders? I know some of you don't remember. But it wasn't even a cassette, it was a big tape recorder that kind of went round like that. And I think it was a bit slow. So I think it was Sangharakshita even slower. But actually, what he was saying was completely electrifying. So there was something about this contrast that really, hooked me in a way. So I thought I would really give this Buddhism a go. And I'd come across Buddhism before, but that's another story. It's quite an amusing story, but I'm not going to tell you. You'll have to invite me back for another talk.